Hello, hello. My name is Aka Kandela Kandepwe, also known as Aka, and this is the Diary 101 podcast. Energy on a 10, because I'm always excited. Is that the right name? Yeah, I think I'm always excited about something. But today's guest is somebody I have been looking forward to talk to because it's all digital marketing and books and just life, mentorship, and all the good things in life. So I hope everybody enjoys this conversation. So without any delay, I'd like to bring Monu. Hi, Monu.
Hi, Aka. How are you doing?
I'm good. How are you doing?
I'm good. I'm feeding off of your excitement, so I'm equally excited.
My energy today is at a 10. You'd be surprised that I woke up an hour ago. No, I did my morning routine, so that keeps me like a 7 of energy, which is nice. Like love.
Nice.
How are you doing?
I'm good, feeling very relaxed. It's a good weekend. It's been a great weekend, actually. Yeah, so I'm really good. It's September, yeah.
We're almost there, almost at the end of the year. How do you feel about that?
I think it's exciting. I wasn't even looking at it that way. I was looking at it more of what's been going on like so far. But now that you mention it, I'm really excited for the end of the year, especially my birthday, because my birthday is in December.
Ooh,
so hoping
yay.
That the new age comes with blessings. So, yeah.
My birthday is in October, so I was
we're almost there.
Pardon?
We're almost there, almost at your birthday.
Yeah, I keep telling myself a gift to myself is not talking to anybody. It's
Wow.
If I can just have a day off, and I will have a day off, like completely. Mm-hmm. I told everybody we can do pre or post birthday stuff. You can send money. You can send the gifts to my house. Just don't call me.
Yeah.
Like, that's the best gift you can give me.
Wow. Pressure for all these people who love you, but okay.
It's not pressure. It's chill. Like, they make me anxious. Like, people calling me.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
People don't call me. They call me course of the week, right? But at the same time, getting so many messages and texts and calls is overwhelming. I don't think we ever look at it that way. Mm. And since I'm introverted, I feel like the best gift somebody can give me is I also don't want to take that away from you. I don't want to take away the fact that you want to text or call.
Mm-hmm.
The best gift is just don't call me. You can text, and it's okay if I don't want to text you back today, and I can text you back tomorrow. It's chill.
That's good still.
Yeah, I'm so introverted.
I had no idea. I would have never guessed.
Everybody doesn't know that about me. When I first met you at the B360 workshop, and you just told me now that you're like, oh no, she's so energetic.
Yeah.
Miss Mutale saved me.
Yeah.
She's like, I was like, oh no, I'm happy to see somebody I know. I'm so happy to see somebody I know.
Yeah.
Somebody I
it's
really
always
know.
Nice to, yeah.
Yeah, because a lot of people, crowds, okay, now talking in public doesn't scare me. I just want to talk and leave though.
Yeah, I get you.
But that's like, I was so intrigued when I saw you work. You actually just switch, right? You're like, oh, this and this and this. You go so serious to say, we're doing this and this is how we're doing it. Thank you. And I'm like, how do you do that?
I think I just have to really know the type of people I'm working with. So working for a university, obviously, it's a lot of useful people. So just being able to instruct them and bring out the energy in them. I try to understand the people that I'll be working with also. So are they energetic? Are they introverted? And if they are, then maybe trying to push them a bit out of their comfort zone so that they can also look at the content and be like, oh, wow, I'm so glad I did that. You know, so just trying to understand my target market and make them comfortable in what they're doing, but also if I need to push them out of like their comfort zone and just really have them have fun, because at the end of the day, that's what people want to see in the content, to see happy faces, you know, and energy doesn't lie. Hey? So if someone is pretending, one would be able to see it. But just sort of getting them in the vibe and, getting them excited. Yeah.
And working for a university is working with different stakeholders, right? Like you have
That's right.
staff or faculty, you have the student. Sometimes you have to engage with other stakeholders if you're at an event and just trying to capture that one thing. I was a student there, of course, of course, of course. One thing I have noticed and loved is the university social media. Like, I am so engaged. Like the two university social medias I love. That's for KU, the other university I went to, and UNILAS. And I'm just like, yes, you guys give the energy. How do you plan? What's like, what happens behind the scene of just the plan?
Yeah, so well, it depends on what the event is. So you I like to think about it in advance. Okay, what am I going for? What type of content can I create? Does this need to be a video, a reel, a still picture, or something else, So pre-planning, but sometimes you never know what could go on. You could go for an event and think, I'm going to take a picture here because you didn't understand exactly what the event was going to be. And then you decide, you know what, this will work best as a reel. But it's always good to think on top of your feet and just make the most of every opportunity because it's not going to come back. But you still need to show people, like, this is what UNILAS is doing. So, yeah, sometimes you have to pre-plan. Sometimes it's literally down to, I'm going to use this song. These are the movements I need people to make. And sometimes it's just showcasing highlights of an event. So, yeah, sometimes you plan and sometimes you just spontaneously go into it and make sure it works.
I'm so curious, what got you into PR and marketing?
Yeah, so I'm actually a journalist by profession. So I have
Ooh.
two degrees. Yeah, so I have a degree in journalism and media studies and another degree in English literature. And obviously, the literature one is where my book comes in, but the majority of my work is the journalistic side. So I started out working for the Post newspaper in 2014 as I was waiting to get into uni. And I worked with them throughout uni until they shut down. And then I moved to Vodafone, Jump, where I was writing. I was a writer. And then I moved to Adlab McCann. And then I've now moved to UNILAS. So I actually thought I'd work as a journalist. I always thought I'm going to be a journalist. Even if, like, you asked me 10 years ago, I'd have been like, oh, I'm definitely going to probably still be working for the Post. But, the Post shutting down sort of moved me out of that. Okay, this is what I'm gonna do. And I'm glad. I'm happy with the way that my path has gone. I think God has been very intentional about allowing me to explore other options other than just strictly journalism. So I moved into marketing basically when I was at Vodafone. When I graduated, I was promoted from Jump into the marketing department, and I've been in marketing since. So even with UNILAS, PR comes in because it's like it's part of journalism. So I never thought I would work in PR, but it's been such a smooth transition from journalism into PR because obviously having worked as a journalist, I know how journalists want to be treated. So the PR side of things then is just me saying, okay, when I was a journalist, what did I appreciate about how people treated me? And how can I treat journalists so that they feel loved and all of that? But also it's very helpful because again, public relations is about understanding the public, creating a good public image. So obviously the journalism side of things has helped with that because I know what type of content people want to read. So it's easy for me, like even from the things that I studied a course that was called Semantics and Semiotics, which is like the analysis of marketing or media content. So instead of analyzing, I sort of maybe pre-analyze and then create content in a way that I already know this is how one would receive this information. So yeah, that's basically how I got to PR.
I'm more curious from how you started working for Post before university. Like, it's very rare to actually find a lot of young people work for such big companies at a very young age, even with no profession. Like, how did you like get that experience or that opportunity?
So my parents were very big on, like, both my brother and I have one sibling. So they were very big on us working in our profession before we even start uni, or even when we started uni, just to see if you'd like it. So even things like before I even did A levels, I was already speaking with editors to understand what the journalism field is like and to see if I really did want to study journalism. So what I had a gap year, so I finished A levels in July from at Simba, and I basically had from July until January to start uni. So I had 6 months. So I got into the post. My dream job was the post. So I simply like just expressed interest to the Post and Daily Mail. In fact, at the time I was supposed to do half internship, like 3 months at the Post, 3 months at Daily Mail. But I mean, my dream was the Post. So I just stayed at the Post the whole time, and they were kind enough to become my home. So every time I was back on holiday, I worked throughout the holiday I worked. And when I was at school, if I had a story, I would write and I would send it to the editors and they would have it published. So yeah, that's basically what it was. I would definitely encourage like other people to get into it because it makes working smoother. You know, instead of you waiting after uni, that's when you're now starting to get your experience.
Yeah.
I think for me, if I waited for that, I would have had very little experience in work. And obviously, if I waited for that, I would have never worked my dream job at the Post, you know. So for me, I would
Yeah.
definitely encourage people, if you have an opportunity, go for it, you know, whether they'll pay you or not. Because I know even me, when I was starting to work, that was a big thing. Like in my interview, I was asking, am I going to get paid? And they were like, well, maybe, you know, and I only got paid after the 6 months. Imagine. And it wasn't even that much. But to me, as a student at the time, it was a lot, you know. So yeah, I would definitely encourage people to do it. It's really good, and it's exposed me so much because now I know what it feels like to work for a media company, and there's so much I learned there. And it's very different because obviously me being so young at the time, everyone would baby you. Maybe I've got last born syndrome. So the way people were so kind to me there, I really needed that. Until now, I can never forget like my first bosses. Even the other day on my LinkedIn, I was posting about my first editor, Masuzio Chakwe. I love her to bits. Like she was so helpful. So I worked with her and the whole team. Everyone was so nice. And it's now very different. Like now you'll not find anyone babying me in the office. There's none of that. It's a completely different environment. But had I not worked at the Post, I'd probably not have ever gotten my gig at Vodafone Jump. I'd probably then definitely not have gotten my job at Adler McCann, and I would definitely not be at Unilas. Lord knows where my journey would have taken me. But yeah.
That's so true. So I got to start working when I was like 15. I was volunteering for UNICEF, and I met
Nice.
this person, who I call my brother now, and he was such babied me. You know, it's like I worked for UNICEF, I worked for Restless Development, and I would always meet people that would baby me because I'd always be the youngest. And you'd be surprised if you go through your babying phase in a work environment that it's easy for you to start understanding. It's easy for you to also take somebody, maybe be kinder to them because you're like, oosh, that was me 5 years ago, and I would just like to be kind to this person because, yeah, it makes more sense. I'm more curious about your teen life. Did you volunteer for any organization? What really wanted made you want to be a journalist?
So I didn't really volunteer, but I did a bit of work at school. So when I was in high school at Banani, we didn't have prefects and all that, but we had tuck shop duty. So you were chosen to be in the tuck shop if you were like a trustworthy person or whatever. So I was one of the people working in the tuck shop. So that was kind of my first job, was working in the tuck shop and serving my other schoolmates, you know. And then when I went to Simba now for A levels, I was privileged to be given a duty to be a character development teacher to grade 8 pupils. So that was really nice also, because I mean at Banani that was a subject we had, and I think it was very helpful in like developing my own character. So it was very nice for me to like impart that knowledge on younger people and just inspire them to be the best versions of themselves. Yeah, so even with journalism, really, it was really a thing of my dad just saying, listen, it would be great if you worked. And I was like, yeah. And also my parents were very intentional about like showing me what work life is like. So my parents would take me to work when I was young and all of that. So that was really nice. So what inspired me to be a journalist now is when I was at Banani. So Banani is very intentional about like sort of grooming you and helping you with your future. So one of the things that they did was we had obviously in the same character development classes, they would sort of give career guidance. So one of the things I initially wanted to be an accountant because both my parents are accountants, and you know, when I started taking accounts in grade 10, it took me like 3 weeks and I was over it. I was just like, what the heck is this? And I'm so glad I had that realization, because I don't think I'd ever fit in just sitting in a room on a calculator. I know there's so much more that they do, but that is not my vibe, you know? So when I decided I was not going to be an accountant, I said, you know what? I want to be an actress, because I'm actually a very good actress. And all my teachers would tell my parents, like, oh, there's this really good school that you can take her to. And my dad would be like, eh, no. Like, they would support me, eh? They would come for all the plays. But see, when the teachers now start to say, you should take her to this school, my dad would say, eh, don't encourage that. We're not doing that here, you know? So even when I told him I want to be an actress, he was like, okay, you can study, get a degree in whatever, something. And then if you want to act, you can act. So that's when now I started asking, like, so what can I be? So my principal at the time, her name was Amy Davis. She then said, you know what? I think you'd make a great journalist, because I used to love writing stories. So I would write stories and read them in assembly. I love public speaking. I was always in assembly. If I'm not reading my own stories, I'm acting or I'm reciting like Bible verses and stuff. Like, I really love the stage. So she says, I think you'd make a great journalist, and I think you should go to Rhodes University in Grahamstown. And that's exactly what happened. From then, that was grade 10. And literally now my parents were also like, okay, journalism, what's the best school for journalism? They did realize it was the same Rhodes University. And my dad was just like, we're going to Rhodes. So from then on, now it was just the goal is Rhodes. Even when I was going to A levels, they were like, we want to take her to Rhodes, so she needs to get good grades for Rhodes. So yeah, that's how my path aligned.
I like how you tried something, which was accounting, and realized it wasn't for you. So I'm the polar opposite. I had bookkeeping and accounting all my high school, like grade 8, grade 9, 10 to 12, bookkeeping and accounting, right? And when my parents, I didn't want to go to university. I just want to be a business person. But it's like a requirement in any family to say, you need to go to school, whatever you're going to decide to do with your life. And if you're young, you're like still under custody. So it's like, we give you money, you're going to do this. I studied accounting and finance. Then now I always say, I can't sit in an office the whole day. I know there's more to, I know, I've studied it. There's more to accounting and finance, but trust me, it's a lot of sitting in the office the whole day. So I was just like, that's so true. So I'm having the, I don't want to sit in an office all day conversation with my family now, which is so funny. I also think you were at a really good high school, to be honest, where you got career guidance, where everybody was so encouraging. It's the element of career guidance that we don't realize is important. I don't think I had career guidance. I feel like there's a little bit of more similarities between you and I. I did want to study English literature because I love to read. I suck at writing, so I didn't think I would survive. Accounting was my last option. Like, I had these options when I was being asked what I wanted to do, but I never had somebody sit me down and explain what that meant and how the future would look. I'm very privileged that my family is more exposed like that, but yeah. So that career guidance aspect in life, how, what makes you think is missing in our education system right now?
I think, well, I can't speak for every school, but I think it would be lovely if, you know, from, I don't, well, not, maybe not so much primary, but the moment someone gets into secondary, I think the system or teachers or principals should be very intentional about encouraging people in their thing. So, like, I think teachers always notice, like, this student is good at this. Even if it's a student who doesn't perform, I think they're still able to see, like, okay, but this one doesn't perform, but they like talking. So the way they like talking, maybe they'll be great as a host. So literally being intentional about realizing people's strengths. So I do that with my nieces. I've got cousins who I call siblings who have kids, and I'm literally able to notice now, even just from interacting with them, like, this one is very extroverted. I think she would make a great media personality person. Not even to force her to be something that I am, but like, she likes to be on the phone. She likes to do, like, oh, can I talk to this? I want to make a video. Hi, guys. You know, so noticing from there that this one is very artsy. And if she does decide to study something that's like science related, great, but she can use that and merge it with something media related. Like, she could be a scientific, I don't know, something that still talks a lot and
Something,
whatnot.
something. Yeah.
Yeah. So realizing that also my nephew, I've got another nephew who's very, very smart, but he's also shy, you know, and he claims he hasn't noticed he's shy, but he is. So he with us, he may not be shy, but I see how he is with people. So even trying to help him, like, okay, what do you want to study? And telling him you can't risk your intelligence. Like, he's sharp. He's been getting awards. Like, he was the top of his whole school when he finished grade 7. He got like a scholarship. Like, he's brilliant, you know. So even with him, encouraging him, you're smart. You need to use your brain. You need to do this, rather than just being like, okay, that person is smart and leaving them. No, encourage people and give them the opportunity to dream and explore, but also encourage them. People will never know if you don't tell them, like, you're really smart. I think you should really go out there and do this and this and that. So just trying to encourage pupils beyond just this is ABCD and this is what osmosis means, like literally grooming people to be professionals or to find their place in society. Yeah.
And I love how you do this with your niece and nephews. Because even if you don't have that at home, it's hard to find it out there, right? At least if you have some level of encouragement, people rooting for you and clapping for you at home, when you go there, at least you have some level of confidence. And I always say, like, confidence is built by competence, right? So if at home they're saying, you're competent, you can actually do this. When you go out in the world, it's easier for you to go like, okay, cool. So at home they said I'm good at this. Let me get other people's opinion. Let me try this out and see if I'm really good at it. And if I'm not good at it, what am I good at? Should I try something else out? And then they start building competence, and that competence starts boosting their confidence. And yeah, I feel like we don't do that a lot in our houses as a community to just say, from home, how are we living and how are we encouraging each other?
That's
With
right.
rooted. So I do think you are so rooted in relationships and community and family. And I'm so curious to know, are you the only child?
No. So I've got an elder brother. I've
How
got
does
one
that?
elder brother. It's okay. I also do have like a very close extended family. So like I said, like my nieces and nephews probably don't even know that their mom is my cousin. You know, they know she's my sister, and she is, you know. So I do have a very close family. So I've always grown up with my whole family, like both mom and dad's side. I'm very close to my family. Like, I've got a very big family. Even now, I was mentioning that I live on a farm. My neighbors are my grandparents, so I'm always at their house, you know?
That's so cool. That's the coolest thing ever. I don't know if I would want to be live that close to my grandma, but just I see my
Let's hope
grandma.
she didn't listen to this episode.
She knows that. No, so my grandmother, it's a funny story. My grandmother, when we were growing up, I grew up with my grandparents. I'm like their first grandchild, kind of their last born. So we grew up with our grandmother, and our grandmother could talk. She can talk. Like, she would wake up at 5 to 22. She is just talking. Have you cleaned the house? Have you cooked? She's so extroverted. And this is why I sound extroverted sometimes. Majority of my family, I'm also really close to my mom's side of the family, and we're really extended. They are all extroverts. I think majority of them are extroverts. So it's like when you grow up with people that are so loud, you have to learn skills to cope. And even now I tell my grandma to say, Like at 6 in the morning, why are we on Facebook?
Bro, I get you. I get you.
Yeah, but it's so nice. But I do love my grandma. She's amazing. And I would love to see her more often. Staying close to her is like, I would leave that to my mom.
I get you.
I've also noticed you're into personal development and mentorship. How's that journey been for you?
It's been so great. I've actually, well, the personal development, yes, I've always been into that.
Yeah, you
But
have.
as for mentorship, I sort of only jumped on board with this year, actually. Funny thing is, a couple of years ago, maybe 2 years ago, a UNILA student actually reached out to me asking me to be her mentor. And that's sort of the first time that I was exploring that. And I'm just like, me, a mentor? I literally said no to her. But then now, this year, one of my colleagues actually just said, Mono, there's this when females lead thing. were applying. I said, let's do it. So I applied. And I'm like, you know what? I'm going to lose absolutely nothing by just applying and trying. So I applied, and wow, like it's literally everything I needed but didn't think I could have had, you know? So it's been for me very, it's been great. Literally having someone assigned to me to be my mentor, someone who doesn't even know me, but she literally risked her time for me. Literally at 22, sometimes we're chatting. And I'm just like, this is a busy working woman. She's a mother. Like she's got so many things. She's a family person, but she would literally drop her time to be there for me. But not even just her. Even just the people on the mentorship program itself, the directors, they are so intentional. Literally at night, you can call them for anything. And these again are people with families, you know? So just seeing people like literally just be able to serve you and advise you and share their own experiences in a very raw way that helps them to be relatable. It's been like overwhelming. Like, wow, I've thoroughly enjoyed myself. And I think that hasn't been the end. Literally, even now, I'm done with the program, but I still can relate with my mentor and realizing that even my family have been mentors. Like my grandparents, I'm talking about, literally, I literally go to them for things like, Washkulu, what do you think about this? You know, and he'll be able to advise me, like, oh, you know, when I was young, I went through this and that. Like, literally, people even affirming you in what you're doing. It's so helpful. I would definitely recommend it for everyone. I'm not saying, like, okay, do the program. The program is great, but get a mentor, get someone who can advise you, someone who can share insight into their own life and be real and authentic with you. It's so good. It's like such a blessing. Yeah.
I've actually been reflecting on my mentors. I'm very passionate about mentorship, and I have like three mentors. And you have mentors for different stuff, but I've also realized how we didn't have a term for it when we were growing up. But over the years, we've had people that have been mentoring us. People would always go for ad, go to ad, ask for advice, and just everything. And then now, when you're a little bit older, you look back and say, oh, he was my mentor, not formally, but informally. That's somebody I always go to for advice. But now that you're like in your 20s or earlier in your career, it's something like you need, I would say. It's something you need somebody else to be to have an objective opinion about what you're doing and just tell you things as they are. It's like I think I was when we had the 360 workshop, the B360 workshop, I was done for the day and I just went upstairs to talk to my mentor. And I had no appointment, but I just stood and said, oh, hi, it's Akat. He's always expecting me. So the fact that this person would actually take the time for an hour just to catch up, just to say, I haven't seen you in months. What are you doing? What do you need? Where are you at? Let's do this again in 2 weeks is something that would make everything lighter. And I do think everybody should do this. I've been trying to figure out how to make mentorship accessible to a lot of people in Zambia. So the easiest thing, because not everybody knows they need it, but it's also a flex. Does that make sense?
Yeah, makes sense. Makes sense.
That's interesting. And I love your socials. I stalked you.
Oh, thank you.
I love your energy. You have so much energy. Like the same energy you put into your work. Like I met you and I was like, okay, makes sense why the universe page is like this and your socials are like this, but very distinct from each other because that's a personal brand and this is an institution or a university. And one thing I noticed is you talked about how you loved English literature. What drew you to that?
Oh man, I don't know if it's something that I've just always loved or been good at. I do know my parents were very intentional about, like, during the holidays, having my brother and I have a book that we're reading. And with those books, like, my dad would have us write reviews. And then we found out later that he wouldn't even read the reviews. But yeah, it obviously got you into like reading. And yeah, so I don't know. Hey, when I was young, I was the type of person to pick up a newspaper. Imagine as a child, I'd pick up a newspaper and I'll sit and I'd read. You know, there were
And
days
that's a lot
where
of
during
us.
break, yeah, During break, I would like have myself locked up in the library at Nkwazi, and I'll just read all these books about Harriet Tubman and so on and so forth. Like, I just really love literature. But one thing I've always loved writing more than I love reading, sorry, one thing I've always loved even more than reading is writing. I love, love, love to write. So even in school, my top subject was always English, And when I started doing English literature, that was like either my top or my second highest. So even in grade 12, like my highest was English, then English literature. And then I also loved like French, math. So then French and then math. Oh, I don't know which one came first, math or French. Yeah. So yeah, I've just always, I in fact, I love, I don't know, Mandy, writing is just a happy place. If I could do one thing for the rest of my life, I would write. Yeah.
If you get paid, you'd write. Oh, you do get paid to write.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sorry. What's your favorite book?
Purple Hibiscus by Chimamanda Ngozi Adichie.
You know what? I love that lady, but I haven't read any of her books yet.
Oh, please start with
I
Purple Hibiscus. She's
know.
amazing, but her literature, oh my days. It's everything. It's everything, literally. That book is the greatest. Yeah.
I'm tempted. I recently, so how I get a new book is I listen to someone speak. So I need to be accustomed to their work. So maybe I'll be listening to their videos or podcast. So when I get accustomed to your work more, then I'm more interested to read your book. So if I just get a book out of curiosity, like there are certain authors who are my, like, let's say Adam Grant. Now I read his book the first time, but I listened to his podcast for a year. I
Oh,
read his
nice.
quotes for like a year, just accustoming myself, preparing myself. Then I would read.
Nice.
I don't know how my brain works with that. It's like I'm mentally preparing myself.
That's interesting. It's interesting. I feel like it
Yeah.
would then maybe help you to also understand the reader. But I will say this, for me, I mean, I don't do that. In fact, I think I would I more like before I ever, okay, no, obviously Chimamanda is famous, right? But like by the time I was, because I studied literature, like even in uni. So there's books that were literally just like, you have to read this book. And then now you're like, oh, okay. But my second favorite book currently is We Need New Names by Novaydet Blawayo. And for her, I only ever heard her speak with, like after I read her book, because now I was trying to understand like more for like an assignment, because obviously you read a book, then you get an assignment, blah, 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 studying literature. So her, she's amazing. And what I love about that book is, so she's Zimbabwean. So obviously a lot of things are very similar to Zambia. So even the Tuma names, like literally it's like Tuma funny names, like it's a pun because we need new names. She like you'd think she's talking about the actual names, because like in the book there's a kid called Bastard, there's a prophet called that Prophet Mboro, which is like, sorry to be vulgar, but Prophet Penis, like all these Tuma weird names. But literally we need new names, as in we need a new identity. And she, Zimbabweans don't have the freedom to speak about what goes on in their country. But she writes this book from the perspective of a child. And so you hear all these, this child exposing what's going on in the country, like, oh, they've given land to the Chinese people there. Here, there's this injustice. And because it's a child, it's almost like she can get away with it. But what's interesting about her is she's never studied literature or anything related. So when people walk up to her and say, I love what you did with that literary thing, she's like, oh, because even she didn't know. So for me, it's like, wow, like even having like just the grace of God to write a book and have it be so perfect, if I can say, is really so amazing. Yeah.
Now you reminded me when I was younger, I didn't have to know a lot about the author to read their book. I'll just walk into the school library and pick a book. It's the first time I read Harry Potter, Airman, and I was such a fictional person, right? Now I'm like non-fictional and fictional, but I really want to just go back to my fictional world because it just helps with your imagination. And I miss that feeling of just walking into a store or walking into a library and sitting down and reading a book, a random book. It's I'm such a book hack. I love books so much. I can talk about books all day. But yeah, I
Me
love that.
too.
I love that feeling. And there's one thing I have been working on recently is I know the power of books. I always say this to my siblings or just everybody around me to say, before you go somewhere, you're going to read about it. Like before you travel to a different country, you're probably going to read about that country or you're going to write about it. And that's how like books help with your imagination. And I was actually telling my mom to say, my mom was reminding me when I was a child, now that we talk about my childhood so much, that I was always a child that would say, I'll travel. Like I'll go to America. You know what I mean? Like I'll travel, I'll get on a plane. And no one believed me. So when I grew up, I did that, right? I did that last year. I did this year. And my
Nice.
mom told my grandma to say, you remember when this child used to say she'll travel? And she's reading in the book and saying, so guys, there's this place called DC and I want to travel there. And no one believed. She's like, oh, the power of the tongue and just the imagination of reading. It's just like, ooh, okay. I'm so passionate about reading. But the thing I wanted to tell you about was I have started a library tour. So I am trying to see how many libraries we have in Lusaka. I'm down two now, like private and public libraries. Of course, the private libraries are better stocked and you have to pay to have access. The private libraries need more work, and it's just bringing awareness to say, oh, these are the libraries in our community, and people should visit them more. Or if you have an extra book, you can donate, because the people in those communities need a safe space to come, read, write, and just relax. And we don't see how that plays a role in someone's childhood or the education system, because when we just hear about the education system, we just think about building more schools, but we're not talking about other ways in which we can enrich someone's childhood or just even as an adult to say, we probably need more libraries so that children can go to these libraries the same way they go to other places. And those that want to sit and read can sit. I really do sound like I love books, eh?
You do. You do. You do, and it's so true. I think it would also improve our reading culture in Zambia.
Yes, they say if you want to lie to a Zambian, put it in writing.
My
Facts.
guy. You know, funny thing, this reminds me, last year, at the beginning of last year, I was robbed. I was at my grandma's funeral and I literally left my laptop and so many other things, my gym bag and so many other things in my car. And when I discovered I was robbed, obviously I'm sad. Oh my God, my laptop, my what? And I looked, these people left books, like valuable books. I was keeping books and I'm just like, oh my God, I was happy. Like I still have my books and like some of those books I had to like ship them like from Amazon. So it was like really expensive to get them, you know. But in my mind, I'm like, you left books. Are you mad?
I would
I
have
would take
stolen
the
the
books,
books. I would
bro.
have gotten the books.
You know?
That's so true. I have a whole library in my house and I have people over. The one rule is you can't take a book out, but if you're home, you can read a book, right? And no
Yes.
one reads these books.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, someone would post them. Like someone would take a picture with a book or so. No one reads. And I have like I think I'm creating one of the best libraries. I feel like when I'm 50, this library will be like,
Something.
yes. And but I'm like, oh, none of my family people read. And also when you grow up in a family like mine, they go like, eh, so all you do is read.
For us, it was a norm. It was the opposite because my dad would always buy you books. Always, always.
No, nothing but books. My grandma, my grandfather, I learned how to read late, so I would read the newspaper to my grandfather. I only had access to books at school or in the library, so I'd have to borrow a book from the library, and so I would prefer reading to studying school stuff. So
Yeah, me
my
too.
grades were always down, and
Me
I'm out
too.
here reading. I'm out here reading a novel, so I was actually banned from reading novels. I had to.
Oh, shame.
Yes, my teacher's got my books because he's teaching, and I'm literally there reading my novel in the corner. I like that about myself, but honestly, it just, I don't know. Like reading is to my safe space. I love my time alone, so taking a walk or just sitting and reading is kind of my favorite thing. So, yeah, I see why I made those choices, and I really do appreciate I started reading at an early stage. He doesn't really like it at home, but yeah, I'm glad it's now they can't do anything about it. Just tolerate it.
Yeah.
I'm glad I was reading something because I couldn't even read. So like, oh, she's at least reading.
Yeah, true.
So if I want to know something about you, what would you tell me from your childhood to learn more about you?
I think I would say I was a very playful child, and I'm actually a very playful person.
You are.
At heart, yeah. So as a child, like you said, I can relate. I used to play and not read. So I was a very poor performer in school for the longest time, literally from like grade 3 up until like A levels, you know? And then when I went to uni, I sort of decided then that hey, this is my life, hey? Like, apa, it's me or me. So then I was like a top performer. Like, I was the type of person to get upset when I get 73% in an assignment, you know? So, yeah, I was a very playful child, like, very carefree. I didn't think about the future. You know, my cousin was actually recently telling me that, hey, Momo, the way you've turned out, hey, like, would have never guessed, hey? Because, yeah, guys, I used to play. I never used to leave anything. I used to play to the fullest, you know? So, yeah, that's what I would say about me. And at heart, like, even now, when you find me, like, in spaces where I'm comfortable, like you've talked about, Mutale, like, that's my girl. Like, when I'm with her, we're just goofing. It's just very laid back and we're just goofing. I like a good time and I love my family so much. Like, I spending time with my family is very therapeutic for me. Yeah.
I always say that there's this time we had earlier this year, my family was chilling together for like in 6 weeks, every Saturday we're together. Then we all went like, there's no way you guys like each other like this. It's like, we're doing this. Oh, great. Let's go. What do we?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Guys. And it feels so good to just have your people and us.
Yes.
Like, so it's like, yeah, I'm with my people and we're speaking our language and we're laughing at those that don't know our language and we're probably talking about them.
Yeah.
And honestly, I was also such a playful child. And this is why I'm like, every time you're speaking, I'm like, that's so me. I was such a playful child. I can't take anything serious. Even now, now I have to go and be like, ish, Aka, now you have this reputation. You seem serious to the world, but when you get to know me, you go like, there's no way you're the same person doing all these things. Doesn't add up. But I think when you enjoy life and when you enjoy stuff, it's easier to live with it. I always say, like, life is hard to just be so strict on yourself and live in a particular way. And it gets easier when you're enjoying the moments, you're being playful. The child in you is still there. I think it's like very important. Because a lot of people are like, oh, you need to grow up, you need to be an adult. I already am by age. But like you really have like your moments of the child in you just being free and having fun and enjoying. And I think that's like how I measure my productivity. At least at 6/10, I should be having fun at work. Like, of course, I'm going to do stuff I don't like, but I should enjoy some element of what I'm doing to actually do it for so long. I don't know if that's sustainable, but yeah. So far, it's going great.
That's good. Good.
So, with the latest trends that you're seeing in Zambia when it comes to mentorship, personal development, what do you look forward to in that industry? Is it an industry? I think it's an industry.
Is it? Like personal development?
Yeah, I think it does fall under the educational sector, right?
Yeah.
Like formal education. Yeah. Like, you know, the
formal education. Yeah, I guess.
Yeah, I guess. Interesting.
I think I'm just looking forward to, I think people should really get opportunities to grow, Mandy, and be affirmed and be encouraged. I think it does a lot for a person when they're, you know, encouraged in their thing, like what you're good at, in their skill, in their craft, in their God-given talent. So it would be really lovely to see more and more people being embraced. I think especially for a nation where we have all these great talents like Muzala Samkangari, you have all these people, and you just, I feel like in Zambia, we're not given the opportunities that we need to the fullest, Mandy, because we have such great talents. And then it's just like, oh yeah, you clap for them a bit and then you move on, you know? So I think it would be really nice to see people being groomed and the like, you know, just being given their full potential, to be able to see a Zambian talent getting the recognition of, like, for example, South Africa takes such things very seriously, you know? So just seeing people celebrate our people to the fullest, not just for clapping, but for making sure that this person becomes rich because of their talent, even if it's not academic. So I think in Zambia, it's like mostly academics who thrive the most, or like football players, you know? But even them, I think there's a lot that needs to be taught, like financial literacy and stuff like that, because how many of our football players can we say now that, like, though, even those that just won AFCON that are still like, wow, you know? I feel like we should groom that. Maybe you have like Kalusha Wadla, yes, who got opportunities and whatnot, but it would be so lovely to see more of our people thriving and being spoken about like on the world stage. Yeah.
I also think that what they don't do is, the most they like to do is, oh no, you got this. Maybe we are going to just give you a job in the government, in military, so that you can thrive or something. Like you said, like, we do have a lot to do in the informal sector. Because, like you said again, a lot of people that thrive and the people we want people to look up to are those that have thrived in their formal life and the education sector, and those people that keep getting their masters, PhDs, and everything. And everybody else that might just say, oh, I would want to straight out of college or straight out of high school just go into running. Like, we don't have that capacity as a country to hold that talent. And also means we're not bringing in money differently. Like, we're not, we still have that one way of bringing in money into the country, like the revenue, that if we actually just invested in the extracurricular activities that we do in high school, we'd probably make a lot of money. Yeah, I think that's also really valid. You work with a lot of students. What's the one thing you've noticed that you could say, ah, oh, okay, this is a trend and it needs an intervention?
It's a good question. I think I usually tend to work more with like the students who are like, you know, doing something. So like they're either in the student union and they're thriving and it's great. Yeah, I have noticed like some students maybe, I don't know, I like, because obviously we have a student counselor, so I noticed that some people, mental health is not so great, but I'm glad that they're getting help for that. So I would say it would be nice if all these students that we have, like I've seen some of them leave and graduate and do big things, like Mwila Wanga and Sam Mpundu. You know, you have those who I saw them on campus, like this is someone I used to see like this, you know, and they've now grown. And yeah, it would be great to see some of these students just having like their talents being like uprooted, and maybe we just say, you come, go and work for this big company. And you literally see them thriving, not just out of their own willpower, but out of like that recognition of, for example, the first student right now that I'm thinking of is Iga. Iga is brilliant, you know, like he's charismatic, he's fun. So I can't wait to see what's going to happen with Iga. Like, where is Iga going to be in a few years from now, you know? You have even Simon Mwansa, I was about to say Simon Mwansakakwepu.
I know. It's okay.
Chadrick Mwansakatuta. He's brilliant. Like, this is someone who I've already seen like what he's doing. Amazing story. So to see his story being shared, but at least I have the privilege of interacting with him quite a lot. So I'm quite privileged to see like what he's doing. But just all these students who are doing brilliant things, who I just think like, wow. Like, just sitting and being inspired by young people, it's so amazing. So yeah, just to see these people still being celebrated. I think one thing I'm privileged to do in my job is write articles about these people. So me, I am privileged to say, okay, come, I want to write an article about you. I want to do a video with you. you know? So yeah, just being able to see these people grow, Mandy, because like literally you can see the talent right in front of you, and it's just so inspiring to see. And also affirming them, because now I'm saying this to you, but I don't think I've ever sat with it. Oh no, I probably have. But yeah, just being able to, even me from where I am, be able to tell someone like, we are going places, and I can't wait to see that. So yeah.
I have to mention that the people I'm mentioning, I do have interacted with two or three of them. And these are like outliers, right? These are people in a group that are doing brilliant stuff and have done a lot to just differentiate themselves from the group. I have experienced that, so I know that. But we also have the students that are not outliers. Students like me. Like students
Really?
like me. Okay, I'll
Yeah,
remove
far from
myself out.
it.
Okay, thank you. I'll remove myself. Like, you could have just let me have that moment,
Girl,
which
no, I'm not going to watch you downplay everything that you do. Not on my watch.
look, I'm not downplaying it, but I would say the first 2 years of university, I was one of the students that would be in and out, right? That didn't create opportunities for myself. And you know what? Okay, still more, I still had a life outside university. And people that would tell me, okay, now it's the time to step back, it's the time to move on with university. But I also think about the other majority of students, the ones that are just there for the degree and don't realize to say it's actually not enough. You need more than that. For your door to open this, you need to work with this and this and this. What advice would you give them?
That type of student would be like me. Because I
Mm-hmm.
feel like for me, I made up my mind. Like I said, I was playing throughout high school and them, and I decided that uni, I'm here just to, I'm going to be the best student, you know? So literally for me during orientation week, while my friends were partying and drinking, I was in the library. I kid you not, you know? I would submit assignments like well in advance. So my advice to that person who just says it's just for the degree, no, make the most of your university life. Have a balance. Play a little bit, you know, take advantage of opportunities you have before you. Another student, I'll give an example of, is Tino. Tino makes the most of everything. Literally, he's debating, he's applying to be in the student union, in the law association. Like, he does the most, and you see him thriving. This is someone who was given the opportunity to go to Hague with three other students, and they thrived. They won a whole international debate. When they came back home, they were champions, and we celebrated them, and we continue to celebrate them. So don't just come here for 1 plus 1. No, interact with people, network, grow yourself. God is good, because again, even if you just come for the degree, God willingly, there's someone who will spot you on campus, and you move out, and they'll be able to say, "Oh, I know that person. We did this and that together." So just try to live. Don't be in your own little bubble. Push yourself out of your comfort zone. And yeah, I was privileged, because when I was in uni, I had people who would, you know, still say like, "Mono, I think you'd make a great president for the Zambian society. What do you think?" And at first, I was hesitant, but I thrived when I was president of the Zambian Society. I really, not to toot my own horn, but I think I did a great job, and I loved it. And there's so much I learned about myself during that experience. And even just getting out of my comfort zone to be a class rep. For me, I didn't want any distraction from school. But those are opportunities for me. I was interacting with professors, you know, professors who would, even now, they'll still be like, "Mono, how are you doing?" You know? Not just here in class, me, I interacted to the fullest. Okay, maybe I also did it to the full in the classroom, because even now I can call my lecturer and be like, "Brian, I need this and that," and he'll do it for me, because we developed a relationship. So not shying away from having interactions. Don't be that quiet person. I think for me, I thrived because there was no class I walked into. Even me being class rep and being chosen year after year was because I was the most talkative in class. And for me, that's how I learned. It's not just reading the book. I would in class have debates. Me, I don't think Papa should have done this in purple hibiscus. I think this, you know. So be that person who people will remember. I recently heard something that says people remember the person who speaks, and I know that because even with when females lead, there are people who will say, "Mono," like when we went for our graduation, it's the first time we're meeting each other physically, and when I tell you that the number of people, like almost everyone was like, "You don't need to introduce yourself, Mono. How are you? I know you." And I was just like, what? Even now, like I finished with the program and they'll still call me like, Mono, can you please come and talk to the cohort 9? And I'm like, oh, okay. I didn't even know that I had, you know, created that perception of myself, especially because I was opening up about open and honest, raw, negative things that have been going on and wanting to learn and grow myself, you know? So I would definitely say, be the person who's remembered for what you said. Speak up, you know, use your opportunities. The world, society is not one that's going to embrace you if you're just quiet. People need to know you. Kenneth Kaunda, remember him because he said things like, one Zambia, one nation. I will fight for Zambia's freedom. You remember all these Simon Mwansakapwepwe because of all those things. Be that person in your own field. So step out of your comfort zone and reach out for what it is that you need to do.
Yeah. It actually reminded me something that I forgot. What inspired you to write Roots?
Yeah, so I'm bi-tribal, as my name suggests. I'm Bemba, but I have a Tonga mother. So my name is bi-tribal. And because my first name is Mono, I've had quite a lot of experience with, you know, people saying like, oh, Tonga people are this and that. I've even had someone accuse me of claiming to be Bemba, which obviously shows that they think being Bemba is the ultimate thing, you know, and how dare I, as a Tonga, in inverted commas, person claim to be Bemba. So I wanted to dissuade people from engaging in tribalism by displaying my own experiences with tribalism and comparing myself. So it's a juxtaposition of me, my name being Mono Chungu, my brother is Chanda Chungu, his name is very Bemba, and you know, just displaying our different experiences. So because my name is Mono, despite me and my brother coming from the same villages, having even the same blood group, like we're so similar, he has one experience with tribalism and it's not even as bad as I have experienced. So just displaying that, displaying other people's experiences, and really at the end of the day, going back to emphasize what Kenneth Kaunda intended to do with One Zambia, One Nation. So the, like I was saying earlier, the book is a pun. The name Roots comes from the roots, like the roots of a tree. Like, where are we coming from? What are we rooted in? And that rooting is 1964, One Zambia, One Nation, but also the roots, as in the roads that we have taken since 1964. So we were rooted in One Zambia, One Nation, but we have gone astray and gone against that and decided to emphasize more on me, I'm Bemba, so this, me, I'm Tonga, so this, me, I'm what, oh, so I hate those people. But, you know, just really also emphasize that stereotypes are not real. Because if, like, the stereotype of, like, for example, Bembas are talkative. I remember that's something that I used to love because I was very talkative in class. And when my parents would get a report that she talks too much in class, I'd be like, but I'm Bemba, you know? But my father, who is even more Bemba than me, he was a very quiet guy. So just stepping out of those things of, oh, Lozi people are stingy, Tonga people are selfish. It's not possible. We are not, we are monolithic beings. So we are all different. There's no way that every Lozi person is like this. It's not possible. So just dissuading that thought and really encouraging people to see each other as just a person. You know, I can be Tonga, I can be Bemba, and I can also be flamboyant, or I can also be that. You know, God did not create all of us. All of you, if you're Tonga, you all be black. All of you, if you're what, you, it's not possible. Yeah. You know, so that's basically what the book is about.
And it's so interesting. I did read about it a little bit online, and I came across it on your LinkedIn, and I had like Google it because I was like, okay, cool. I did see this somewhere.
Yeah,
I do think it's a book that should be everywhere, especially in high school or primary school, because not having this conversation, it's a very uncomfortable conversation, especially for the older generation, right? Like people like my grandma. Or my grandmothers, or just grandmothers or grandparents in general. It's how tribal, I'm sorry for this, guys, but it's how tribal they all are, right? It's like I get in very uncomfortable conversations where I just say, I have no comment. I wouldn't want to be part of this conversation because I just feel like it taints everybody badly. And if I have a friend that's Bemba, I just do think this person is amazing as a friend. And you telling me how Bemba people do this and this and this and this, it's just swaying my relationship or just tainting it. And I just wouldn't want to do that because probably they're also one of my emergency callers because of just who they are. So it's interesting how we all experience tribalism differently. I
Yeah.
don't know if I've experienced it, but I've heard comments where you
Yeah.
hear, oh no, lots of people are stingy. And I'm like, but my grandfather was so good.
Bro, that's exactly how I think half the time. Like, the same thing with Tongas, that they're stingy. My mom is one of the most generous people I know.
It's
You
like
know?
lots of people are this. I'm about like, damn, my grandfather raised half of his family. Stingy doesn't add up. So it's like there's this perception and there's the reality, and we're all just trying to be in the middle place to try to understand. I also think some feelings are valid. It comes from experience. It's just making sure other people's realities don't become our realities. We just have
That's
to
true.
validate their emotions and move on. I want to read that book. Where can I
You
get
should. So I can sign you a copy and have it sent to you. Yeah, so I have all the copies other than the ones on Amazon. Amazon is much more expensive though. Like the last time I checked it was like $10 or $9. So if you get it from me and you're in Zambia, it's much easier. I can sign you a copy and have it sent to you. Yeah.
I will get that copy. Because I'm also trying to read more literature from Zambia, because I'm trying to see the difference in how we're writing and where we're at, and probably want to do this comparison again in the future. Oh, okay, I just want to compare books in Zambia and in the world, just see different perspectives. And it's also interesting to now start reading more of our books. It gives you like a better understanding. I've only read two books. One by Mrs. Nzingamelu. I don't know what the other one is, but I would like to start reading more books.
Yeah.
Had to get
They're
to read
really
them.
good. I
They're
think they're
really
really downplayed. You know, currently my favorite Zambian one, other than my own, because that is my favorite Zambian book, but Linda Kasonde's Women Resilience. Oh my God, that is a book. She is so raw in that book. Everybody needs to get it. Like, if you've ever wondered, like, who is this Linda Kasonde who is doing all these big things in that book? Oh, Mandy, really, like, I love how raw she is with that book. Yeah.
I really can't wait to go on this journey to read Zambian authors and actually just start having conversations about our books, because we have like conversations about everybody else's books. I'm like, I read the people's books and I write reviews, but it's also like,
Nice.
how can we start listening and reading about the people in these positions? What are they saying? What's actually happening there? It's not there,
I'll
but
tell
I
you
want to.
this. I'll tell you this. A lot of people who've read my book, because me, I ask for reviews. So there's this one girl who's like, she reads and she reviews. She literally sent me a video crying after she read one of my paragraphs. I was talking about the AFCON we won, because again, my book is also like a love story to Zambia. So I'm also just talking about things that happen in Zambia and trying to paint a picture of what goes on in Zambia. Because you know, you read a book like Catcher in the Rye, it's American. And it's based in New York, and you're hearing all, you're reading all these things and picturing, oh my God, that's what New York is like. So for me, I wanted to create that imagery as well of Zambia. People should know that, oh, when you pass the stadium, there's this, like literally displaying those places. So I'll have people saying, like, when I read that, I really love that I saw, I know that part. I know what she's talking about. I know that part on the road, on Kabwe Road. Or like this girl sent me a video crying, saying, when you display that AFCON thing, I thought it like it's again today. She literally sent me a book crying, and I've seen her reviews. She's very raw. So to get someone like actually displaying that, you know, I would definitely say, guys, let's read more African literature, more Zambian literature. It's so rich.
Yeah, and we get to learn more about our country and ourselves.
Yeah.
Like, I'm more on like, what's your foundation? Where are you from? Do you understand? What does that mean when you're from there? What should you take? What shouldn't you? You can only know that when you now start getting ingrained and start understanding a lot of stuff that happens. Because I also feel like, I would say my generation, we're always on the surface. We're always with the trend. And no one is like really focusing on the foundation. So we're always shaken by so many stuff. Like, we can be shaken easily, because you don't have foundation. You don't know where you're rooted from. So it's like any small thing can give you anxiety. Any small thing can shake you off. Any no can just persuade you to just go the different direction because somebody said no for the first time. So it's like when we start understanding our own culture, we start questioning a lot of stuff. Things that need to be questions, things that don't need to be questions, things. And now the truth is, we're going to be the next parents, we're the next aunties. So we're having people look up to us. What are you going to tell these kids? What culture, what tradition do you want to pass down to them? What do you like? What don't you like? Why don't you like that? Like, really? Don't you like it? You don't like it because you don't like it? Or it's something bad. You know, it's like we need to start having those conversations and start differentiating. Because if we don't, our culture will actually die with us. And the next generation will live off anything else. The reason why I'm so integrated in that right now is when I went to South Africa and I was so happy to be to know Sotho because it's similar to Lozi. And then you start realizing how people appreciate their culture, how people love their language, how like everything about it, and you go like, ah. And then you start knowing the difference. Like, oh, am I don't like using the word culture, but am I rooted in my tradition? Am I rooted in my culture? What do I like? What don't I like? Are we having these uncomfortable conversations at home? Do we need to have them? So it's very interesting, and yeah, I really, and maybe that's why I also want to. We should have Zambian books in our library. I went to a
We
library
should.
at the museum and I found Greek books. And I was just like, what's going on? Like the book said, do
What's
not
happening here? What is
mistake.
this? What
So I'm about to visit a museum next, a library next week. And I'm just like, oh, this is interesting. Like, do you guys know what's in these libraries? Like, people can't come in. Like, for the museum, it's like a 10 kwacha to go to the library, right? Which is relative and people can afford. And there's power, so you can go to the museum, read your book or work. And I'm like, okay, guys, if I want to read a book on the shelf, what's here? And literally nothing. And I was like, it doesn't add up. They did have newspapers though, and I'm like, oh, smart.
Nice.
But I'm just like, yeah. So it's like even just what we're letting people read, what's in our museums. Our museums are actually reflecting our reading culture as a country. That's what I would say.
True.
Yeah, it's actually very interesting. Have you visited any museum in Zambia?
I
Most of them.
haven't. Not in Lusaka. I visited the one in Livingstone a very long time ago, but I've been meaning to visit. I actually want to get Mutale to go with me. Yeah, to the one in what's it? Our National Museum there next to Government Complex.
Oh, there's one
Yeah,
at Government Complex too.
yes, like right next to that. I think that's the biggest museum in Lusaka.
Wait, where's Government Complex? Is it the one by
The one like near
Because
Kamwala?
there's a museum in the library, so there's another museum by Government Complex. I need to visit it.
Which one did you go to?
So
Because I've seen you posting on your LinkedIn.
there's a museum where you go to the museum, right? There's a library in there. Like, there's a
Oh yeah.
kids part and the adults part.
Oh
That's the one
nice.
I visited. I do
Oh
know there's
nice.
one by Civic Center.
Yeah.
I don't know about the one. Like I, when you
No,
go,
the
please.
one on Civic Center should be the one at Civic Center itself.
Yeah, I think so. I
Oh,
saw it on Google Map.
really? Oh,
I hope
interesting.
it's
Okay. I think I
like
should explore museums. Like, there would be so
they're
much
actually a
content
lot.
there.
They're actually a lot. There's one in Chilenge. I visited that one
Oh, yes. The
few
one in
years ago.
Chilenge where Kaunda used to live, yes?
No.
Another one.
There's one where when you go to Chilenge ShopRite,
Yes.
the other side, is that
Oh,
where Kaunda?
interesting. No.
No, I've never been to
Okay.
where they used to live. Okay, now listen
I've
to
never
us.
been there either. You see, those are places we need to go to. Even us, we must explore what it is to be Zambian and, just be rooted in our things.
Actually stay close. I'm just lazy.
Now, I should definitely take time to go there and explore.
And sometimes it just takes an hour. So for me, it's taking an hour. I always like take time to read. So I go there, explore, sit for an hour and read, and like take my content. But yeah, it's interesting that even where Kaunda used to live, there's a library, or it's just a
No, not
house.
a library. I thought it was like a museum, some type of
Amazing.
museum, but I've never been there, so I wouldn't even be the best person to speak.
Yeah, I do think this. I can't wait to see how many libraries I get to discover in Lusaka. Let me know the one at Government Complex because I haven't seen it. I wasn't looking for it, so.
No, that one is not a library. It's just the museum itself.
Oh yeah, that's the museum I'm telling you about. So the
Oh, it
museum
is,
has
right?
a library. Yeah, has a
Oh,
library.
yeah?
Yes,
Oh,
I
nice.
yeah, so the museum has a library at the back.
Ooh. Oh, nice.
Yeah,
I'll
like
check it out.
yeah, so it's
I'll
the
check
one I
it out.
told said it has newspapers and old books, and literally this reflects our reading culture as a country. Because if we could just have better books, our libraries and people can read. Because if I go to a library in Zambia, I'd like to find a book about Zambia, and I'd like to find a book by Stella Chipimo. You know what I mean? Like you find these different books that are talking about different stuff in Zambia. Because even the museum itself, it has weird stuff. Like, and it's like, what am I learning? Like, I have elements of learning about the presidents, villages in Lu, village, how a village setup looks like in Zambia. And yeah, we have Omabilis and everything. I'm like, we already learned this in school. I don't think it's necessary to have it in a museum. Like, there's no richness in
We need
culture.
to update
They really do. Like, and because I've gone to other museums, I'm like, literally, when you walk into a museum in America, the ones we went to DC, like, has so many museums, right? You learn a lot about what they've discovered, what they've learned, where they're at. Like, the museums should be updated with what happened with the 2021 elections. You know what I mean? Like, what happened with the AFCON? Like, what happened when SATA also came into power? It's like you should have those stories to say, we won the AFCON, it's not in the museum. It's like we should have those pictures documented because a lot of pictures were done. We should have things documented about the last 10 years or just the 2021 elections so people can go and you learn something about the governance side of the country. And we don't have that. And I'm like, I go to the museum every month for the vibes, and I like the library now.
I love
But then you
that.
just realize to say, if I'm taking my sister, what is she learning? There's nothing there. Like, you can't retake somebody and teach them something because it's not updated. It's part of our culture and education. So
Yeah,
that's a story
true.
for another day. But
I
you should visit it if you haven't. So nice.
definitely will. I definitely will.
You see the gap and you go like, oh, okay. And I hear the Livingstone Museum is good. Like, it has a
Yeah,
lot
it is, but I
concrete
haven't been there in
stuff.
a very long time.
Me too. I hope to visit it this year. But I hear it has a lot of concrete stuff. They probably just need a bigger building. Right, Munu, we're coming to the end of the session. And you have an opportunity to ask me a question.
Okay, so I have it's more of a challenge
Let's
than a question. Would you share your stories more on LinkedIn or wherever? You know, just I think it one thing you do by sharing your stories, you get a chance to inspire people.
Yeah.
So you see how you're talking about mentorship, just sharing how mentorship has helped you, because not everyone is going to have the opportunity to ever chat with you. You know, s just a select few will be privileged to have that. So having you share so that younger people will also be inspired, and older people too, because not just young people. So for me, hearing that you've got three mentors, great, I'm inspired. You know, sharing that, sharing what your experience was like when you went to DC, sharing how it was a dream you had that came to reality will inspire someone to know that, you know what, if she can have a dream and it come to life, even me, because a lot of people have dreams and then they start to believe, they internalize people not believing their dreams, and they also start to believe it's not going to happen. But if you put it out there that this is a dream I had that came to life and this is how I experienced it, it was better than I expected, or whatever, you know, just share your story. I would love to see a lot more of that type of content as well from you.
So, I know it's a challenge, but I'd like to kind of answer it and just give my two cents. I am learning. I'm learning to step out of my comfort zone. I don't like to know, I don't like people knowing so much about me. So I was very enclosed with the information I share about me. I'm okay with people thinking I'm doing nothing. So that has always been me. If I did stuff like go to America, go to South Africa, and that wasn't family stuff, that was sponsored, actually was recognized to be like one of the best in the country. And yeah, so that is rooted with the child in me that was rejected and said you wouldn't be good enough. And then the teenager in me that was oversharing on Facebook and got bullied. And the adult in me that's healing that part of my life and saying, okay, I can really start talking about my work and start sharing it. And how I do it, I'm slowly getting into it. I don't know if you've noticed, like slowly but surely, I am actually trying to talk more about my work. And this is why you met me at B360. I wouldn't have done that on any day. I would have just said, you guys are joking, you know? But I was like, oh, I have nothing to share. And also, like you said earlier, I downplay what I do. I'm one of the people you meet and you go like, nah, I don't think. I'll be like, I don't do anything good or smart. So it's me trying to get out of my comfort zone of late. Like, I do plan on sharing more about my work. I don't know how, because sharing on like I even now I had to ask my friends, do you think I'm sharing too much? Because for me, yes, that gives me so much anxiety to just like, oh, but sure, I'm doing so much. I'm posting on Facebook, I'm posting on LinkedIn, my socials are so busy. So now I'm just trying to differentiate sharing my work, sharing how that looks like, and sharing my personal life and how that looks like. Honestly, it's a whole journey that I'm excited to embark on. I don't know how it's going to look like. I don't know if I'll change my mind, because I change my mind so much when it comes to sharing my stuff. But yeah, on work-wise, I do think I'll start sharing more of the things I do. And one of the ways of getting out of the comfort zone is the podcast. It's a safe space for
You're
me.
doing well.
Thank you. It's a safe space for me. It's something that didn't come easy, but it's uncomfortable. I've learned so much about myself. So I think the best decision I did this year was have a podcast. Because now when I
That's
have a
awesome.
podcast, I am talking to more people and listening to their stories. So it's like, oh, instead of me sharing my story, because I think that's me showing up, showing off too much, letting other people share their story and knowing that's okay gives me a platform to want to share my story. And
I'm
that's the
so
part where
glad.
I actually tell people to ask me a question. Because a lot of people
That's
are
good.
curious.
Yeah, that's so good.
I realize a lot of people are always curious about me. Like, oh, I've been dying to ask you this question. So whenever somebody meets me, like, you know what? Thank God I met you because I've been dying to ask you this. And I'm like, oh, damn. Wow. So now, even this, the podcast helps people learn more about me. Yeah. It's like it gives.
You know, can I challenge something?
Yeah,
You
sure.
spoke about how, you know, sometimes you feel like you're oversharing and maybe you're showing off. And I think that's something that a lot of people feel. And that's the reason why a lot of people shy away from posting about things that they've done. But for me personally, I like to think of LinkedIn, for example, as an online CV. Literally yourself, you may forget something. Imagine being 70, your memory is frail, but going back and looking at your LinkedIn and remembering, like, wow, I did that. You know, we have the potential to inspire ourselves, eh? So, like for me recently, I watched my graduation speech from grade 12, and I was so inspired. And I posted it, and I remember people commenting, like, I wish I was that confident when I was that age. I do know that there are people who think, ah, Mono likes things. You know, Mona is full of herself, and I'm not. I know I'm not. But for me, I'm a child like you who was bullied. I'm a child who, wherever I got it from, but I internalized for the longest time that I'm just dull. You know, I speak about this even in my book. I come from a family of very intelligent people. Like, my dad was top of it in the whole entire Zambia when he finished grade 12, and he got a scholarship to study. My mom is brilliant. My brother is brilliant. I'm not that. I was never the sharpest tool in the shed. So to now realize that I actually have potential somewhere. And I'm not gonna lie to you, I don't even think of myself as, oh my God. Even people are like, oh my God, you're Mono. Me, I'm like, ine Mono, ine. That's Chigio from Mbala, you know? But to be able to even celebrate myself and tell my story, you know? So I it's refusing to be that girl who will be bullied, who has believed she's dull, who, you know, all these negative things and taking up space, you know? It's far from showing off. I don't even think people at heart really do think it's showing off. I think just it's life is life. And there are people who will not like it when you believe in yourself because they want you to think you are less than. But I've had that time. I've had that time of thinking, ah, who am I? I'm never going to do anything. That's why I'm not ambitious. That's why this and this and that. You must be able to share your stories. If it's any validation for you, it's not showing off. Even hearing you speaking at the B360, for me, it's like, wow, look at what this young girl is doing. Look at how this young girl sees the world. Look at how this young girl wants to take space in a very unique way. Yes, come and speak and inspire these other young people because that's what they need. So seeing you out, because in that room, you're speaking to a group of 30 people or plus, you know, what about if everybody hears about how Aka, me, I'm inspired, and I think people need to hear those stories. And I don't think there's anything you showed off here. It's just the reality. Imagine if people felt like Kaunda was showing off when he said I'm Zambia's first president. But he is. We must know this history.
Yeah.
You know, people need to know your story. What is your story? Your story is relevant. You are sitting with a very powerful story. Share it. Trust me, you're not only going to inspire people younger than you, even older people like myself will be very inspired.
I will. Thank you so much. I needed that because I was planning to publish stuff this week. And I'm in so much doubt.
Girl, I can't tag me so that I must see.
I will tag you, Bunu. But it's true. And to be honest, because I got a mentor and my mentors would shove me to speak to some of their students because most of my mentors at that point when I was in university were lecturers. So they were like, I want you to come in this room and speak to the current students I have, da 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 da, and I've been doing this for 2 years. Nice. I like to think about it as progress, right? Two years ago, I wouldn't have never stood in B360 and talked about that and understood it. If I didn't start the podcast and started understanding my why and problem I'm trying to solve better, I wouldn't. So I actually do think I have made so much progress and I'm so proud of myself. Like you said, I just need to ramp it up. So much. Like now I'm planning to just share a little bit more, be conscious about it. And to be honest, yeah, it's true. It did happen, right? It's not a lie. I did do this and I'm really good at this. It's just something I need to make peace with and move on. I really needed this, Munu. Thank you so much. It's given me a lot to think about as I plan on how I want to finish the year and the direction I'd like to take. Sharing a story, because I actually met somebody last week and they were like, we don't know about people like you, and I'm like, I don't want to be known. And a lot of people say that to me and I'm just like, oh, that was so cool, thank you, bye. But yeah, I just
to thank you, bye.
I am that person on any day. I'm like, oh good, thank you, bye. So so it's true, thank you for highlighting that, seeing it and just telling it as it is, and expect to see a lot from me in the next few weeks and months, especially with the content I have now. It's like, I can't wait.
I can't wait either.
This is therapeutic. My therapist should know I took a session for the month. Muno did it. As we come to the end, I'd like to know, what do you look forward to at any level? Business and professional.
I look forward to growing. I constantly look forward to growing. I think people should never be stagnant and comfortable with where they are. But I've reached a stage where I'm really looking forward to even leadership. So I hope in whatever way, God will be kind enough to groom me for that time when I can be a leader. Doing the When Females Lead program has definitely opened my eyes to like being someone who can lead and all of that. And I've been privileged. I now have an intern and I love her. And I've realized recently that, you know, my mom shed light. She's like, yes, you're passing on the baton. And literally now realizing, what type of leader am I going to be? Am I going to be a kind person who affirms the people who are under me, you know? So I'm looking forward to that. I'm also looking forward to really just experiencing life to the fullest. Over the last year, I've, well, 2 years actually now, I've sort of told God that I desire his will above my own. And so I haven't really been very expectant of, oh, this should happen. By this time, I should do this. It's more like, Lord, take the wheel. But now I'm reaching a point of frustration. So me and God are fighting a bit about that in a very gentle way. But yeah, I'm just looking forward to doors opening and like a lot of growth and yeah, happiness really at the end of the day and fulfillment in what I do. And ultimately, I'm looking forward to bringing glory to God, you know, just to share my story as a testimony, to inspire someone, to encourage someone, and even to encourage myself, Mandy, at the end of the day. Yeah, that's what I'm looking forward to.
I love that you're passing on the baton. We don't realize that it needs to be passed on because you're always thinking you're going to be in that space. But yeah, something might come up and you probably will move on to something bigger or better, however that looks for you. Success, happiness. Yeah, I like that. And honestly, Monu, thank you so much for this conversation. It's such an enlightening conversation. Yeah, I went from energy of a 10 to like a 7. And that's a good thing. I like to be grounded. I like to be challenged. And I like to think beyond what I think is okay. And this is what I got from this conversation, to just not to say, a lot of things are not okay, a lot of things are okay, but if you know yourself and your realities, that's all you need. So thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
So guys, we've come to the end of this episode. I hope you liked it. I hope you can share it with your friend because it's something that will inspire you. It's a lot of things that are unspoken and we need to start talking about. And it's a lot of things to look forward to from me, from Monu, from our work. So we really can't wait for you to share with others so they can get inspired. But as for now, bye.